Okay, Parshas Vayikra. So Parshas Vayikra begins the book which focuses a great deal on various karbanos, different types of sacrifices and offerings. I'd like to focus this afternoon on one small detail of that. What I generally like to do in this class is to learn a series of psukim and learn them in depth. We're going to veer from that a little bit, and we're going to get off of the text a little bit. That happens every once in a while. You know, it's just the way it goes, especially in Sefer Vayikra. We'll start on page 548, which is right towards the beginning of the parsha. The beginning of the parsha begins with describing the different types of sacrifices. It describes the sacrifices, whether or not they come from sheep or from goats or from birds, and exactly how those sacrifices are offered and the details of them. I want to talk a little bit about the Korban Mincha. The Korban Mincha, which is known as a meal offering. There were five different categories of meal offerings which were offered at various instances. We'll learn a little bit about it inside, and then we'll focus on a specific law. So it starts to begin, the second chapter is really where this begins, on page 548, 549. Right in the beginning of the second chapter, when a person offers a meal offering, v'nefesh ki sakriv korban mincha la'ashem, when a person will bring such a meal offering, so what is a meal, what does it mean, what does he bring, what does he do? Assuming someone's going to ask me that question, right? What is it? Well, the Torah tells you. So says the pasuk. So when a person brings this korban mincha, solas yihyeh korbano, shall be of fine flour. So in essence, what the offering is opposed to the animal offerings of a sheep or a goat or oxen or really general sheep, goats or a kid or birds. Fowl, certain types of birds are offered. This is a fine, there's no living, no death has to take place in this type of offering. It's just fine flour. What does he do with this fine flour? Says the Torah, V'yotzak aleha shemen, v'nasan aleha levona. He pours oil upon it, and then he places a frankincense upon it. So it's flour together with oil, and then frankincense, a type of spices, a group of a series of spices put together that provide a nice aroma. That is what is brought when a person brings a mincha offering, a korban mincha. Generally, this is clearly going to be far less expensive to bring than an animal, certainly the larger animals. And this was therefore generally reserved for the less wealthy of the population. When they needed to bring an offering, they would bring a korban mincha. It's certainly much more affordable. It's a little bit of flour, a little bit of oil, and a little bit of frankincense. What does he do with this offering? Ve'hevi'o al b'nei Aharon, says the Torah, he'll bring it to the sons of Aharon the Kohanim. Ve'komatz misham milo kumtso misalto mishamna al kol levonasa. Then he takes a three fingers full. Artsko mena, there's no way to translate. Milo kumtso, there's a certain process, I think it was the back three fingers, if I remember correctly. The carbon would scoop out of this bowl of oil and flour and frankincense three fingers full. And what would he do with that? From that he would cause its memorial portion to go up in smoke on the altar. That would be placed on the Mizbeach and would be burnt. Ish ereach nichoyach la'Hashem. And that would be a satisfying aroma to Hashem. So instead of placing an animal up there and sacrificing, going through the whole process of the sprinkling of the blood and the burning of the insides and whatever went on when they bring a sacrifice, this was a much more gentle process, if you will. They would bring the bowl, the person bringing it would have his bowl of fine flour, oil, and frankincense. The Kohen would take a little scoop, put that on the Mizbeach, that would go up in flames. One more verse, I'll take questions. V'hanoseres min ha-mincha, and then the remainder, what about the rest of the bowl? I mean, he just took a little scoop and put it on the Mizbeach. What would he do with the rest? That would be for Aharon and his sons, most holy. Kodesh Kadoshim would have their various levels of holiness in terms of that which the Kohen can eat. This would have the higher level status. And that's what would be, then that would be to the Aharon and his sons. The Kohanim would eat the remnants. They would be permitted to eat that, and a little bit would be placed on the Mizbeach and burnt. Now, what the Torah then goes on to say in verses 4 through, looks like 8, are different types of minchas. In other words, what we described was a very simple one in which you basically just took the flour, poured in some oil, added the frankincense, mixed them up, the Kohen takes the fingers full, and that's it. There were actually three other types which were cooked, or baked, weren't brought as raw flour, oil, and frankincense offered together. That you have in Pasuk Dal, ki sakriv korban minchon me'afei sanur. If you were bringing the type that was baked in an oven, then it should be fine flour, unleavened loaves mixed with oil, or unleavened wafers smeared with oil. So there sometimes it was only with the oil, sometimes it was with the mixed with oil, smeared with oil, put in an oven, then sometimes it's in a pan, sometimes it's in a deep pan. So there are various ways in which this was brought. The ingredients pretty much stay the same. They're consistently flour, oil, frankincense. Sometimes it's brought raw, sometimes it's baked, sometimes it's baked into a wafer, sometimes it's deep pan. So there are slight variations as to exactly how you brought it and under what circumstances you would bring which type. That is not relevant to us today, exactly what, why would you bring this type, why would you bring the deep fried versus the regular fried versus the baked versus the plain. But there are different categories, like everything in Judaism, different things require different things, and therefore there are various categories of the type of mincha that was offered, but they all basically had that same type of ingredient. I saw Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch writes that these three particular qualities, flour is of course the staple of life, that from which we make our bread, which is it's not only on bread but on Hashem's will, but the physical sustenance that we survive on is traditionally bread. So we bring our sustenance, our primary staple, in the form of flour. Oil represents a little bit more of luxury and the finer things in life, and frankincense is pleasure. And we bring those three things together to Hashem to sort of say, you are responsible, in charge, the provider of our staples, our luxuries, and our pleasure in life. And somehow we represent with those three materials our offering to Hashem. A little bit is put on the Mizbeach and burnt, and the rest then goes to the Kohanim, and they'll be able to eat that. Excuse me. Okay. That is the basic process of the mincha when it is brought. Okay, now let's get to the part that we wanted to focus on. So, just so that we shouldn't feel like we're skipping anything, Psukim 9 and 10 explain the same process for these other various types. Veheirim ha-kohen min ha-mincha es azkara, so that again the kohen will lift up its memorial portion no matter how you brought it, whether it was deep pan, whether or not it was regular pan, whether or not it was baked in an oven, whether or not it was just plain. Either way, the kohen lifts up its memorial portion, causes up it to go up in smoke, a satisfying aroma to Hashem. And then in verse 10, the remnant of the meal offering is for Aaron and his sons, most holy from the fire offerings of Hashem. And that describes the basic process. Now, what we are interested in is our verses 11 and 12. Says the Chumash, Kol ha-mincha asher takrivu l'Hashem, no matter what type of mincha you're bringing, any type of meal offering that you are bringing, lo se'aseh chametz. Now you have here a mixture of flour and oil and frankincense, and very often there'd be water added to the mix, especially when they'd be baking these things. Says the Chumash, but no matter what, you are not permitted to allow this mincha, this meal offering, to become chametz. Ki chol seor v'chol devash lo saktiru mimenu ishel Hashem. For you shall not cause to go up in smoke any leavening or fruit honey. Devash literally means honey. Rashi, as understood by all the sages, understand that it means both literally honey, anything out of the dates, anything that's made out of fruit or fruit honey, any of those sweet things which come from the fruit or the fruit itself or the honey, or any leavening object, the seor, which is used to make chametz, those things are not permitted to be on the Mizbeach. So I just went through, says the Chumash, this concept of a meal offering. Again, we're in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. I describe the offerings, the sheep, the lamb, the goat, the fowl. And then I get to the meal offerings, and I go through the different types, whether or not it's baked or cooked or whatever. But no matter what you do, says the Chumash, you are not permitted to allow it to become chametz. It is mixed with things which might otherwise make it chametz. You cannot allow it to become chametz. No chametz is allowed on my mizbeach, nor is anything sweet like the fruit honey or regular honey allowed to be placed on my mizbeach. One more pasuk. There is one exception to this rule. Korban reishis takrivu osam laHashem. You are permitted to offer them as a first fruit offering to Hashem. Well, put a pause exactly what that is. just to finish the pasuk, v'al hamizbeach lo ya'alu l'reach nichach. So as a first fruit offering you can, but you may not go up upon the altar for a satisfying aroma. What is this exception of a first fruit offering? A reishis, korban reishis. So Rashi says, well, the korban reishis actually refers to two different types of korbanus that are referred to as reishis. One, says Rashi, two lines into the Rashi on page 552, if you want to follow it inside. Ki korban reishis takrivosa ma yesh l'cha lahavi min ha'asor min ha'advash. What are you permitted to bring that's leavened or that's sweet like honey? Korban reishis, the type of sacrifice that's called reishis, meaning a beginning or an opening. First fruit offering. Says Rashi, what is that? Shtei halechem shel atzeres. On Shavuos, about 2 months away from now, one of the sacrifices of Korban Shavuos, one of the offerings, is the shtei halechem. There were special 2 loaves of bread which were brought on Shavuos. Those 2 loaves brought on Shavuos were specifically made into chametz. And that was called, it says, Shenemer chametz teyafena. That's one exception. And the second exception is ubikurim. Every year when your crops would blossom, you would bring the first of your fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. There should be a special procedure called the bikurim. And that is min hadvash, certainly called from the honey, from the actual fruits, like the bikurei te'enim utmarim, the fruits of your dates and of your figs, those would be brought. So those are your 2 exceptions. Once a year on Shavuos, you were permitted to bring 2 loaves which were actually made out of chametz. And then the second prohibition of the fruits, of the honey, had 1 exception of the bikurim. One time a year, you were permitted to bring bikurim, and that was also the exception to this general rule. It was clearly sweet, it was the first fruits, and that was brought to the mizbeach. Those are your 2 exceptions. Outside of that, says the Chumash, absolutely no chametz and no dvash, no sweet, no honey, no first fruits are permitted to be brought onto the mizbeach. Obvious question, I'm imagining you're all wondering. Why not? Exactly. I mean, what is it about chametz? Now, the reason why I'm specifically speaking about this is because when you hear the word chametz, you think about
Pesach,
right, as a cleaning for chametz, whatever you're thinking of, but it's Pesach related. So this is an appropriate topic to get us into. It's Rosh Chodesh Nisan today. We're in the Pesach mode. What is the reason for this prohibition? This is not a Pesach prohibition. This is an answer to a trivia question. If anyone ever asks you, where else in the Chumash does chametz play a major role that has nothing to do with Pesach? This is the answer to that trivia question. So if anyone stops you like along the streets and poses that question to you, you will now be equipped with the answer. Chametz plays a major role in the Chumash outside of the Pesach story. In this law that says that when you bring a korban mincha, when you bring a meal offering, you are not permitted to allow it to become chametz, with the exception of Shavuos, and the exception of the honey, and the exception of bikurim, when you bring the first fruits. Why?
And to offer a mincha, you can offer it any time during the year?
I believe you can offer it any time of the year, and there are specific instances when it's required and when a person wants to bring it. For example, I'm not holding in all of them, but the korban todah, a certain type of sacrifice, which is an actual animal, which is brought in thanks to Hashem, together with the korban todah, there's a series of mincha offerings. Also, there are a number of different things that are brought together when the korban mincha would be brought, yeah. Why can't this become chametz? That is the question. So what I'd like to do is, we fulfilled the first half going through the actual text, and now we're going to veer off of the text to try to understand why this is. So I forgot to bring my Ramban. I thought I had everything I needed, I forgot one thing. Okay, so I'll say it over without reading it inside. So the first starting point is that the Ramban, Nachmanides, quotes Maimonides. As for the reason, why is this prohibition? Why, when I bring a korban mincha, why can't I bring it from chametz? So Maimonides says, as he does in other instances regarding the general concept of the sacrifices, that was done by the pagan beliefs of the time. When the Jews exited from Egypt, many of the pagan beliefs had different types of sacrifices, different types of animals were worshipped, and different types of things were brought. And one of the things that were brought, suggests Maimonides, were these leavened products for the lushness, the wealth represented as such, and the sweetness of the fruits and of the honey. And as a response to that, because it was done specifically by the idolatrous nations of the world at the time, so Hashem did not want us doing it. And the Ramban, in explaining this, references a statement of the sages that says, even though when the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov lived, we find them all the time offering sacrifices in their own backyards. They didn't go to a specific place, or they didn't have a Beis HaMikdash, or even a tabernacle. They just offered it wherever they wanted. That was okay. Since it became adopted by the peoples of the world, that they would offer sacrifices to their idolatrous gods, so then Hashem did not want us doing it either. We'd have to be in a specific place under specific guidelines. And he brings that as an example where there were things which once had been permitted, but once it became adopted as idolatrous practice, then we refrain from doing it because it has now these new connotations, and therefore we stay away from them. So Maimonides suggests that's the reason why we don't have chametz or these honey products, because it was adopted by idolatry, and therefore we stay away from it. Fine, that's an explanation. That's what he says. Let's look. There are various other approaches which have various other explanations, which we will look into right now. Okay, ready? Let us start with the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch I've referenced before in this class is a work he goes through, one of the medieval scholars known as the Rishonim, goes through all 613 mitzvahs. He was one of the earlier works to do so. There are a number of works which went through the 600th, like, what are the mitzvahs? There's a statement in the Gemara that says that there are 613 mitzvahs, a statement in the end of Tractate Makos that derives, based on the word Torah, the numerical value of the letters of the Tuf and the Vav and the Resh and the Hey that spell out the word Torah, 611. Plus the first two of the Ten Commandments, which were said by Hashem himself. So, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe commanded us the Torah, 611. Hashem commanded us directly in two. For a grand total, says the Gemara, of 613, Taryag. That's the source of the concept of Taryag, 613. It comes from such a Gemara. But we don't find in the Gemara any list of what they are. The laws of the Torah are well into the thousands, tens of thousands. But we don't classify each one as a separate mitzvah. Those are just all the various laws. Shabbos has hundreds of laws, but how many mitzvahs would you count Shabbos as? So various scholars throughout the ages have actually set about to quantify, well, what are the 613 mitzvahs? So Maimonides did it, and the Sefer HaChinuch was one of them as well. So the Sefer HaChinuch, what his niche is in going through the list, is that he wrote what he calls a shorish, what he calls the root of each mitzvah. So every mitzvah has a purpose, a meaning behind it, and he suggests what it will be. What are we supposed to gain? What do we learn? What's the purpose? What is it supposed to accomplish within us from this mitzvah? Now, he writes very clearly in his introduction, and then he repeats this throughout his work, I am not saying definitively this is why God commands us to do it. I don't know why God commands us to do anything. These are my suggestions, what we gain from these mitzvahs. We do them because God says so, and we don't know what His reasoning is. But let me at least explain to you what some form of a logical reason why we have them, what we can benefit from. And then he writes over and over again, the reason why he calls this a Sefer HaChinuch is that he intended this to be a book for bar mitzvah boys, that we should teach them when they're 13, we should give them something that they should understand, that it shouldn't be like French to them. They don't know what's going on. So we'll teach him, we'll give him meanings. But as he repeats over and over again, don't think this is the full depth. This is being written for children, that they should have some understanding, and as their mind develops, they will then further their understanding of the purpose of the mitzvah. So I give that introduction as whenever he gives a reason for a mitzvah, he himself is not saying this is it. On this mitzvah, as to why we're prohibited from bringing chametz and dvash and honey products onto the mizbeach, he writes, "Mitzvah zu ne'elomim me'od." This mitzvah is entirely hidden. Limtzo afilu remez katan. I cannot even find the smallest hint of understanding as to why there would be such a prohibition. Now, he writes a sefer, he wrote on all 613, he comes up with reasons for everything. I remember, we learned this during Minchan Maariv of the last, took him 3 years to finish. Every night I would do one mitzvah between Minchan Maariv, we would study the mitzvah together, and then after Minchan Maariv. So he says this maybe 3 or 4 times out of all 613 where he writes himself. He just throws up his hands and says, I have no idea why this is here. and then he'll like search for something. This is one of them. This prohibition of why you cannot put chametz on the mizbeach is, I have no idea. Yet he's going to produce two suggestions, nonetheless. But I introduce that with whatever he's going to say, he himself introduced with, I have no idea. This one is one of the hidden mysteries of the Torah, why in the world we're prohibited from putting chametz on the mizbeach. Nonetheless, he suggests as follows. Kol inyone hakorban le'oirer machsheves hamakriv, says the Chinuch, which he writes over and over again when he discusses the concept of sacrifices. Everything about any type of offering that a person brings in the mizbeach is to somehow awaken within himself certain feelings, certain understandings, a certain closeness to Hashem. The process, and he describes this at great length, the experience of going to the Beis HaMikdash with an offering, the experience of meeting with the Kohen taking your offering and doing whatever he would do with it based on the type of offering, and then him eating it, or you're eating it, or seeing what he goes through, how the whole experience was one which was supposed to create certain feelings, certain thoughts, certain understandings in the person who was bringing it. And according to the actions that he would go through in the sacrifice, according to those actions would affect his thought process. The Sefer Chinuch is a big believer, as he writes many times, "Acharei ha'pu'ulos nimshach halavavos." Through one's actions, one's heart is pulled. The more you do something, the more it affects the way you think. The more you give tzedakah and give and give and give, it changes your thought process into becoming a giving person. So if you want to change the way you think and the way that you feel, he writes over and over again, just do things. Do the things you want to become. And the more you do them, the more it will actually impact and affect you. So you just do them and do them and do them. So the purpose of the karbanos are to do certain things which will create within us certain feelings and thought processes. Therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, Beharchik HaChametz, in prohibiting us from allowing the sacrifice to become chametz, what does that create when you bring your karban mincha, when you bring your meal offering? Speed. Have you ever been in a matzah factory? Right? What is everybody doing? They're running around. Because this is a matzah factory. We just had one right across the hall this morning for the kids in the preschool. Everyone's running around quickly because from the time your water hits your flour, the clock has started. And the entire success of your mission, which in this case is either baking matzah or bringing a korban mincha meal offering, depends on not becoming chametz. In the same way as your matzah becomes chametz, it's no good. Well, if your meal offering became chametz, there ain't no kohen in the world who's going to allow you to put it on the mizbeach. It's an explicit prohibition in the Torah. So there's clearly a preparation room in which you would have your flour and you mix it with the oil and the frankincense, and many of them had water. And then from that moment until it got to the Mizbeach, the time, the clock had started. You had to be careful, you had to pay attention to make sure whatever went on, that it didn't yet become chametz. There's a specific amount of time that you had before it would become chametz, suggests the Sefer HaChinuch. Therefore, in preventing us from allowing it to become chametz, shehu nasa b'shehiyah gedola, chametz happens when things wait, when things sit, when there's time. When time happens, chametz happens. Therefore, yikach dimyon liknos midas hazrizus. So therefore, the one who's bringing it acquires within himself the trait of alacrity, of zrizus, of being quick, of being light, of being fast, b'maasai Hashem Baruch Hu. So that in all of your actions that are of spiritual quality, of doing the mitzvahs of the Torah, of fulfilling Hashem's wishes, the experience that you have after going to the Beis HaMikdash is one of, we got to move quickly to do this. When things are happening of the divine, you have to go quickly. And he quotes the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Havikal Konesher, be light as an eagle, run like swift as a deer, strong as a lion, to do the Ratzon Hashem, to do that which Hashem desires. Now, asks the Sefer HaChinuch on himself, what's with the exception? How do you explain Shavuos? So why on Shavuos do we bring chametz? On Shavuos, the two loaves that we bring, specifically the Torah says, have to be chametz. What happened to this experience of being light on our feet, of being quick, of acquiring the traits of alacrity? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, that's not a problem, because that's a korban tzibur. That's not an individual's sacrifice. That is, there are one set of two loaves that are brought on Shavuos for the congregation, for the Klal Yisrael. So it's not like every individual partakes in that. So when it comes to the general rule for the Tzibur, that it's not a problem, because laziness generally is found within the individual, but when it comes to communal affairs, someone will make sure each one of us, his language is as follows, ki harabim yazhiru zedzeh. We'll egg each other on. We'll make sure that it gets done. Since this is all of Klal Yisrael's sacrifice, we'll all make sure that it happens. Now, this is going to be a little bit of a diversion, but it's a great little diversion. There's another daily sacrifice that is of the tzibur, of a public kind, and not of the individual kind. And that is, the mincha tmidis b'chol Shabbos v'Shabbos. Every Shabbos there's a korban mincha also. That is a tzibur. It's a public offering on behalf of Klal Yisrael, not brought by an individual. So according to the Sefer HaChinuch's rules, should that be allowed to become chametz, or must that remain non-chametz?
It could be chametz.
Could become chametz, because his rule was the individual suffers from laziness, the individual suffers from the lack of alacrity, the lack of being, of moving. But the tzibur will help each other out, will push each other along. So it should be that the Shabbos weekly offering should be, according to his rule, since it's a public offering, should be allowed to become chametz, because we don't have to worry about it. The lesson learned when it comes to the general rule will help each other out. Says the Sefer Chinuch, but it's not true. We find that that also has a prohibition of becoming chametz. Only on Shavuos do we say this. Says the Sefer Chinuch, the difference is how frequently does the public offering get brought. And here he says a beautiful thought, which I'll expand with something else as well. I'll explain it with another law. Anyone know how often you have to check your mezuzahs at home?
Three times every 7 years?
No, you're both wrong.
Once every 7 years.
You got all. It's the 7 years is the right number, but it's not once every seven.
Three, I say.
It's twice every seven. Okay. Twice in 7 years. Yeah, it's right in the middle. Right in the middle. Twice every 7 years. Why we don't say every 3.5 years is a separate question, but the way the halacha says it is twice every 7 years. How about public mezuzahs? That's in your home. What about public mezuzahs? Mezuzahs needed to be b'sha'arecha, the gates of your city, gates of different areas. There are public places that also had a mezuzah. How frequently do the public mezuzahs need to be checked? Every year? I think it should be more frequently, right? Does anyone know a fascinating halacha? How often do public mezuzahs need to be checked? Twice every 50 years.
Wow.
Once in 25 years they need to be checked. You want to know why?
Mm-hmm.
One of the commentators in the Shulchan Aruch writes the most fascinating reason for this, because it's entirely counterintuitive. In my own private home, it needs to be checked every 7 years. How much use does it get there? People in my house. Public mezuzahs probably get 10 times the amount of use. People going back and forth and kissing it and touching it, and it's outside sometimes. It should need to be checked far more often, yet it's checked far more infrequently. Once every 25 years, twice in 50. What's the reason for that? One of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch says as follows, because if you'd have to check your mezuzah every year, the public mezuzahs, do you know what every single individual will say? Someone else is going to check this mezuzah. It will get done. Yeah, of course, someone's going to take care of it. Who? I don't know, someone else. Capital S, someone, capital E. Someone else is going to take care of it. But if you make it that it's only once in 25 years, then what happens? The line will be wrapped around the shul 4 times, people lining up to have the privilege of checking the shul mezuzah, which only happens once in 25 years. If it happened every year, it would never happen. But if it happens once in 25 years, we'll make sure it gets done. Because then, it's special, it's unique, and everybody will line up to do it. Birchas HaChama, once in 28 years. Who didn't come to make a bracha on the sun once in 20 years? We filled the entire Torah Day School field with people from the community. Meanwhile, we make brachas like hundreds of times a day. And what? It's the same. It's a bracha. And there was nothing more than a bracha. It happens, it's not the same. So the concept of the mezuzah, we actually check it less frequently to make sure that it gets checked because of its unique value when you do so. Supply and demand. The less supply, the more the demand becomes. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, the same idea when it comes to the public offerings. A public offering on Shabbos happens every week. The whole lesson is to teach alacrity, being involved, making sure whatever it is that you need to do, that things happen quickly every week. That's not going to happen. Every week is old hat. 3-4 years go by, you've seen it 400 times. Forget it. Shavuos is once a year. Once a year you bring an offering of two lechem. There the lesson doesn't need to be so ingrained. We can allow that to become chametz because that's such a clear exception. We don't have the concept of everyone will egg each other on. We'll make sure that it happens. We'll apply on Shavuos. But on Shabbos, to say that people will still make sure that it happens quickly. How can you make sure it's happening quickly? Shabbos happens every week. These offerings are brought every week. It's old hats, nothing special. So the combination of when is the only time to suggest the Sefer HaChinuch that we can use chametz, since the lesson it's teaching us is to be quick-footed, the only time is on a public offering that happens infrequently, then everybody will be making sure that it still happens quickly. But everything else, in order to teach us this lesson of moving quickly, does not have any chametz in it. Let me share two other thoughts on this idea that the Sefer HaChinuch is suggesting. One comes from a Mishnah that I was just studying last night with the group. Someone asked me a question on a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. One of the more moving Mishnahs, in my mind at least, and it comes at the end of the second chapter of Pirkei Avos. Mishnah, I'm sure you are, I hope you have heard, since it is so beautiful. The Mishnah says, well, that's not so common. Hayom Katzar, the day is short, says the Mishnah. Vam Lacham Rubah, yet the work is abundant. The task is great. It's a short day. Great task needs to be done. The hapoyalim atzelim. The laborers are lazy. That's us. It's a short day. There's a lot to do. The workers, the laborers are lazy. Uvaschar harbe. Yet the wage, the reward is great. Ubal habayis dochik. And the master of the house, capital M, master of the house is insistent. So the mission, these short phrases, presents that situation. It's such a short amount of time. There's so much to do. The workers are so lazy, yet the reward is so great, and the master of the house, God, is so insistent on getting it done. So somebody asked me, why does the mission define all the workers as lazy? Is every person you know lazy? I mean, we see people who are inspired to do things, who get up, who are driven and motivated. What does the Mishnah mean when it says there's like a short amount of time and a lot to do and the workers are lazy, even though the reward is great and the master of the house is insistent? So what I thought, when I answered him last night, and I'll share with you today, is the following idea, which ties in beautifully with what we're talking about over here. Just to start with an example, the standard default expression on a human being's face. You're just driving home or listening to a class and not paying attention to your face, and I'm looking at all your faces. Are they frowning or are they smiling?
Smiling.
Nope. The default position of someone's face is not in a smile. If you're just driving down, you're driving in the car on the way home and you're not paying attention, you take a glance in the rearview mirror, you're not smiling. It actually takes energy and muscle movement to smile. A person has to want to smile. The default position is, you know, is parv, if not a frown. Right? It's somewhere in between a parv and frown type of face. That's just the usual expression. When a person smiles, how do you know that they're smiling, that they're thinking? They say, what are you thinking of right now? Why do you think to ask that? Because something has clearly happened that has made this person smile, which means they actually invested energy and muscle movement to change their face into a smile, prompting you to ask, what's so funny? Or what did you just think of? Similarly, I think, and is what I answered last night, the standard default position of the human being is lazy. Is I will just sit back and do nothing unless something inspires me to get myself up out of bed and moving. If I was not inspired by that, my default position would be one of laziness. Now, what inspires you could be a host of things. It could be putting food on the table. It could be not losing your job because you'd be embarrassed if you lost your job. It could be because you're inspired to succeed. You're inspired to accomplish. You want to accomplish physically, spiritually, and whatever. But there's always something which is getting you out of bed to do something. If there was nothing pushing you out of bed, the default human position would be one of laziness, of indolence, of just sitting and doing nothing. We need to invest, just like on our faces, we need to invest the energy to smile. We don't walk around with smiles on our faces. Hashem created us in a way that says, I want you to work on this. I want you to pay attention and invest in being happy. He also requires us to invest in activity. Our standard position would not be that. And so I suggest that, this is just my understanding, that's what the Mishnah is saying. You have a short day and a lot to do, and the workers are lazy. I'm not defining every person and saying you're lazy, you're not. You might not be lazy, but what I've given you, what I created, says the Mishnah, speaking on behalf of God, is a situation in which there's a lot to do in a little time, and the people whom I created to do that are inherently, by default, not inspired to do that. He didn't make us like bees. A bee is born, and by instinct is busy, is moving, is doing things. We're not like that. We have to inspire ourselves, and lots of things can inspire us, but we must be inspired. Without inspiration, without drive, we will do nothing. We are inherently lazy. Despite the fact the reward is great and the master of the house is insistent, we still need to constantly inspire ourselves to accomplish, inspire ourselves to do more, to milk what we can out of every moment we have in this earth, because otherwise our natural default position is just to, whatever, take it easy, not push ourselves. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, you're not permitted to put chametz on my mizbeach. On my mizbeach, in my home, says God, on my altar, you move. You learn that you have a task to do, and you have to learn that task. You have to inspire yourself to task. You have to become that. So in my mizbeach, there is no chametz. And you'll see what it's like. In my house, you're moving quickly, because as soon as you bring that meal offering, and they put the oil in, and they put the frankincense in, you gotta go. Because it's to teach the concept of having to move. Tying this into Pesach, once we're already here, and it's Pesach, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there's a Rashi, and it's really a Gemara, but Rashi quotes along these same lines that warrants being said over once we've gotten to this point. When the Torah describes matzah and the prohibition from becoming chametz, one of the phrases it uses to do that is the phrase "Ushmarta mes hamatzos," you must guard the matzos, which is an odd way of saying the law. The law that it's teaching us is don't let it become chametz. Guard it. Watch it. Make sure that it stays matzah and not chametz. Generally, it would have used the phrase as Tishmeru mechameh, don't let it become a chameh. Here it's guard matzah. It should have said, generally the way that it would have said it was, don't allow it to become a chameh. So the sages picked up on this phrase, ushmartem es hamatzos, and noticed that since the Torah doesn't actually have vowels, this odd phrase of ushmartem es hamatzos, guard the matzah, can also be read, if it would be vowelized a little different, to read ushmartem es hamitzvos. Guard your mitzvos. And the sages say, isn't that a nice little phrase the Torah threw in there when it didn't have to? Guard your matzos can be read, guard your mitzvos. Shelo yavo'o lidei chimutz. Do not allow it to become chametz. Says Rashi, al tikrei es hamatzos, don't read it matzos, but read it as if it says mitzvos. Kederech she'ein machmitzen es hamatzah. In the same ways, you must be careful that your matzah does not become chametz. Kach ein machmitzin es hamitzvah. Do not allow your mitzvah to become chametz. How does matzah become chametz?
Past 18 minutes.
Right? Too much time goes by, your matzah becomes chametz. What would it mean for your mitzvah to become chametz?
Too much denial.
Ella im baliyadcha, if a mitzvah comes to your hand, ase osa miyad. Do it right away. Ushmartem es hamitzvos. In the same way as you have to guard matzah from becoming chametz, you have to guard a mitzvah from becoming chametz. Asks the Maharal, I mean, it's a beautiful little play on words, but what does it do with each other? What does running to make sure your matzah doesn't become chametz, outside of the same word matzah and mitzvah being the same letters, just vowelized different, what's the connection between matzah and mitzvah? Says the Maharal, along the lines of the idea that we've been discussing, we eat matzah, as the Haggadah says, because in Mitzrayim, when the Jews exited from Egypt, it happened so fast. Hashem revealed Himself to us so quickly, we did not have time for the dough to rise. Explains the Maharal, when Hashem wants something to happen, there is no withholding it from happening. When Hashem does things, they happen fast, with a great strength. Why? He explains in Yonim Hasichliim Pu'ulosam Shelo Bizman, things that are of the seichel, of the spiritual, of the mental, of not the physical acts, but types of acts which are through one's mind, neshama, seichel, they don't work through time. Lefi sheim einam tachas hazman. They don't work in the confines of time. Time is a very physical creation. With the creation of the finite world came the concept of time. There was no time before the world was created. When Hashem existed before the world, there was no such thing as time. There was no clock. You wouldn't measure time. Time is a measurement of the finite world created with the Bereishis Bara Elokim, with the creation of time. Hashem himself is Haya Hove Ve'iya, was, is, and will be, because he's not bound by the limitations of time. The closer you come to the divine, the more you are, or the less, I should say, you are limited by time. That which is most physical is more limited by time. As an example, this is a much deeper concept than we're going to go through its entirety right now, but the concept of, take any food product, what happens over the course of time? Becomes stale. Any piece of information that you have now, 10 minutes from now, will become old. Right? It's old news. Things, as time goes by, the nature of the world ages. It gets old. It gets worse with time. Dust settles. It becomes overgrown. Time has a way of ruining, so to speak, things. That's the nature of time. There is one or two major exceptions to this, which parenthetically I'll mention. What's the one exception? What gets better with time?
Wine.
Wine gets better with time, which is why we use wine as a koshel bracha. When we make kiddush, when we have sheva brachos, wine, a bris, wine is the connection between the physical and what we're trying to accomplish in the spiritual, because wine is the quality that's the exception to the rule. Wine actually gets better with age. Everything else in the world gets worse. Every living being, as it ages, breaks down and dies. Animals, humans, plants, that's what happens. Gets old, breaks down, dies. That's what happens. That's what time creates. Hashem does things b'chipazon, with great haste, because the spiritual connection to the divine is not limited to time. And therefore, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the birth of the eternal Jewish people, that's the other exception to time, I think, is the concept of the Jewish people. We are the eternal people, which don't make sense on any level, in any historical perspective, that we should still be here today, is because we are the eternal people that defies all logic and reason. We were created b'chipazon, with great haste, as we left Mitzrayim, when Hashem took us to be His nation. Time was not a factor. Couldn't be a factor, because the eternity of the Jewish people, connecting to the eternity of our Creator, required great haste. Says the Maral, every mitzvah you do touches with the eternity, touches the eternal, touches the divine. A mitzvah opportunity presents itself, the opportunity to take the physical beings we are in this world and connect to the divine. Ein machmitzen es hamitzvah. You cannot let the mitzvah be affected by time. I'll take care of that. It'll happen. You have to grab hold onto the mitzvah with the same haste, the same alacrity as with the matzah, because what we're doing, says the Maral, is connecting that to the divine with the same great haste, the same concept of being above and beyond time, not affected by the limitations of time, requires that same drush, in the same way as we guard the matzah, because the matzah represents the haste in which we left Mitzrayim, connecting to the divine. The mitzvah that we do also have that same quality of connecting us to the divine, and therefore we do those mitzvahs with the same great haste. That's a shortened version of a much longer talk, but that's how that ties into the suggestion of the Sefer HaChinuch. The same idea is, why is there no chametz on my mizbeach? Because on my mizbeach there can't be chametz. There can't be a concept of time going by, of wandering around the Beis HaMikdash waiting your... When you're coming to offer this meal offering, it's with great haste, with great purpose, with great sense of needing to accomplish quickly and on time. That's why great wine is the one bracha where you can make a bracha of Bor Pi HaGafen, and we don't actually make that bracha to eat or drink the wine. Meaning, like, all foods, you only make the bracha on the food in order to eat it. You can't make a bracha and not eat the food. The Bor Pi HaGafen we make at Sheva Brachos or at under the chuppah, all at a bris. You technically, or Avdallah even, technically speaking, it's a whole discussion about who drinks and why you should drink, because the drinking is separate from the bracha. The bracha of the Boreh Pi HaGafen is a standalone bracha of praise to Hashem for creating such a product of wine which has this unique quality. We usually drink it because it's not nice to make a bracha and not drink it. But it doesn't have that same status of every other food where it's not even a thought. Like, what do you mean make a bracha, not eat of the food? The only reason why you're making the bracha is to eat of the food. The Boreh Pi HaGafen has an element to it of it in itself is praise to Hashem just alone. The Boreh Pi HaGafen bracha, without drinking from the wine. We like to drink because it's appropriate. But there are two separate concepts, again, based on the uniqueness of the quality of wine, that it has that that unique quality. All right, I have promised you four. I only got through one.
Oh, my.
Let me at least do... let me at least stop one more in the last five. I totally miscalculated how much there was to say on this this first one. Let me at least share one more from the Sefer Achinuch. I just prepared my class for Parshas Vayikra next year already. It's already... it's prepared. Okay. So the Sefer Chinuch suggests another one for the prohibition of chametz, and that is that chametz has an interesting quality to it. What happens when you add so'or, when you add this leavening product to flour and water mixture?
It expands.
Says the Sefer Chinuch, that's a quality which is antithetical to the Jewish belief system. We are not interested in taking ourselves a representation of who we are and watching ourselves and our ego and our chests expand in greatness. In the Beis HaMikdash, in front of Hashem, the entire experience is supposed to be one of humility, of coming before Hashem and saying, my staple of my food, my life, my flour, and my oil, representing the luxuries that I own, and the frankincense, representing the pleasures that I have in life, it's all because you provide me with these things. I am but a servant in your big scheme of things, hoping to fulfill that which you desire and require of me in life, and therefore, representative of that, says the Sefer Achinuch, you are not permitted to bring your dough, your simple flour, oil, water, mixture, frankincense mixture, and then allow it to expand with all that bread represents of the luxuries of life. We're here to take the luxuries and say they all belong to you, so we keep it simple. And therefore there is no... one is not permitted to have chametz because toyavas Hashem kol gvalev, quoting a verse, I believe that's in Mishlei, yes, that it is abominable to Hashem, all the haughtiness of heart. So where you don't want to be haughty, the entire purpose is to create humility, therefore there's a prohibition of bringing chametz into the Beis HaMikdash. He quotes the same idea, basically applies to the dvash, to the sweetness of the honey, which when he writes, when you heat it up, it expands, and it represents all of that, the sweetness in trying to move away from the physical pleasures of life, which honey represents. Therefore, those things are prohibited from being brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, the other one is just too big to get into the last 2 minutes. So we will leave it at that as far as the prohibition of bringing chametz. The exception, of course, is on Shavuos. And the idea is we're getting ready for Pesach, this idea of chametz, of great haste and alacrity in which with which we prepare a matzah to teach us about all mitzvahs, the concept of being able to move quickly as we get ready for this great Yom Tov of Pesach. All right, I wish you all a fabulous day.